Translation, do the trees not live? Do the bellows of the blacksmith not breathe? Or around us, do the beasts not eat and discharge semen? Purport by Śrīla A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The materialistic man of modern age will argue that life, or part of it, is never meant for discussion on theosophical or theological arguments. Life is meant for a maximum duration of existence, for eating, drinking, sexual intercourse, making merry, and enjoying life. The science, the modern man wants to live forever by the advancement of material science, and there are many foolish theories for prolonging life to the maximum duration. But the Srimad Bhagavatam affirms that life is not meant for so-called economic development or advancement of materialistic science, for the hedonistic philosophy of eating, mating, drinking, and merrymaking. Life is solely meant for tapasya, for purifying existence, so that one may enter into eternal life just after the end of human form of life. The materialists want to prolong life as much as possible because they have no information of the next life. They want to get a maximum comfort in this present life because they think conclusively that there is no life after death. This ignorance about the eternity of the living being and the change of covering in the material world has played havoc in structures of modern human society. Consequently, there are many problems multiplied by various plans for modernized man. The plans for solving the problems of society have only aggravated the troubles. Even if it is possible to prolong life more than 100 years, advancement of human civilization does not necessarily follow. The Bhagavatam says that certain trees live for hundreds of thousands of years. At Vrindavan, there is a tamarind tree. The place is known as Imlitala, which is said to have existed since the time of Lord Krishna. In the Calcutta Botanical Garden, there was a banyan tree said to be older than 500 years, and there are many such trees all over the world. Swami Shankaracharya lived for only 32 years, and Lord Chaitanya lived 48 years. Does it mean that a prolonged life of the above-mentioned trees is more important than Shankaracharya or Chaitanya? Prolonged life without spiritual value is not very important. One may doubt that trees have life because they do not breathe. But modern scientists like Bosch have already proved that there is life in plants. So breathing is no sign of actual life. The Bhagavatam says that the bellows of the blacksmith breathes very soundly, but that does not mean that the bellows have life. The materialists will argue that life in the tree and life in man cannot be compared because the tree cannot enjoy life by eating palatable dishes or enjoying sexual intercourse. In reply to this, the Bhagavatam asks whether other animals like dogs and hogs living in the same village with humans do not eat or enjoy sexual life. The specific utterances of Srimad Bhagavatam in regard to other animals means that persons who are simply engaged in planning a better type of animal life consisting of eating, breathing, and mating are also animals in the shape of human beings. A society of such polished animals cannot benefit suffering humanity, for an animal can easily harm another animal, but rarely do good. Om Jnanatananda Shya Jnanjana Shalakaya Chakshu Sumilatandi Na Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Tavitam Jena Bhutale Swam Rupa Gramayam Dharanti Swabhanantakam Namo Shivaya Gurupada Gurulesh Mahi Sri Gurupada Sangyamani Namo Shivaya Gurupada Gurulesh Mahi Bhattavata Sangyamani Namaste Sarasati Divam Gauravani Pichanini Nivishisha Sanyuvavi Vastatari Siddhari Jai Srila Prabhupada Jagat Guru Sivantai World. What a wonderful purport, because Prabhupada has this unique ability. Not exactly unique, but in some senses in modern times, to bring the modern world to the Vedas. This was Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur also very much was in that line of trying to marry in the modern world with the words of the Vedas. And here we can see in Prabhupada's purport, everything is very precisely put in contemporary terms so we can understand the significance of the Vedic texts and how they apply to this day and age. He's referring here to modern man trying to extend life to the maximum, thinking that by extending life, the duration of life, one will be able to perfect somehow or other, that will make life better. And he points out here, Shankaracharya only lived for 20 odd years, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu 48 years, and I think Jesus Christ something like 35 years. So it really doesn't matter about the duration of life, but rather what impact someone might have on life and how they might influence society in good ways. And currently we see the foolish Darwinian philosophers, because Prabhupada speaks here how society has been changed by this kind of approach, that by tinkling with material energy and adjusting it accordingly, life will improve. And Prabhupada points out, not necessarily. I mean, it could do. We're not decrying all aspects of modern scientific approaches. In fact, some of it's very good. And actually, they kind of shoot themselves in their own foot, if you like, because all their approaches to scientific research, when they delve deeper and deeper into it, it only reveals more complexity. And when we have complexity, one can assume intelligence, isn't it? Whenever you get complex systems, we must assume there must be intelligence behind that. So the intelligent design movement, which I harp on about quite a lot, the work of particularly James Torr, Michael Behe, and Jonathan Wells, to name a few, are very good because they're all scientists in biology, physics, chemistry, and they analyze life. And when they delve deeply into life, they see the patterns, and they conclude there must be an intelligent design. So, in fact, the arguments given by the Darwinian philosophers, or should I say, rather, that before Charles Darwin came onto the scene, the atheists had no real argument to give against God. And if you analyze that as a fact, what could they say? Of course, in the Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavad Gita, there is a study of people that thought materially, but it wasn't really elaborated upon. And also, the only other argument they could give is that there was no God, but rather there was one energy, and we're all part of the energy, and there's no specific personality who's in charge of that energy. So that's the only argument they could give, which was very strong in India, of course, but not so much in England. But later, some of the yogis went to India, didn't they? And they started this kind of thought, and it became very popular. Interestingly enough, there was one, his occupation was a crime writer. Not a crime writer, but a crime solver. And he was giving an interesting talk about if something occurs in a crime and there's no evidence of how that crime took place, you have to then study how did it happen, what happened before, and what was the consequences after the crime. So they kind of look into, for instance, a relative of the person who might have committed the crime. They look into the bank balances and the history of that person, what they did, what their relationship was like before this with this person that died, and after the person died, what was the consequence? For instance, if they got a big insurance payout, they might get suspicious. So when crime takes place, there's an analysis of things before and of things afterwards. So the point is, I'm making that there's a time slot when Prabhupada came to America, which was very ripe for bringing out Krishna consciousness in so many ways, because the whole theme of yoga was there, the whole theme of high consciousness. And also, one can argue, this gentleman argues that, for instance, Jesus, the coming of Jesus Christ, before he came, the Romans came, and they actually annihilated a lot of, or rather didn't annihilate, but they paved the way for communication, because they bought roads, they bought, there was writing. You could then write on paper, and they had so much technology. So before Jesus Christ came, before the Romans came, none of this was available. But after the Romans came, and they were also very flexible, because they were not necessarily into the idea of annihilating other religions. They let people be, like that. So they facilitated what I'm saying. So a certain time period facilitates certain spiritual events, like the Romans coming, preparing the way because of their technology, because of communication, and so on and so forth. Roads, empires were built. When the Roman Empire was so extensive, communications took place very easily throughout the empire. So when Jesus came at that time, communications could take place and the message could be spread. What to speak of Srila Prabhupada, when you think back on the 60s and 70s, it was a wonderful time. Technologies were just beginning. And as well as that, the thoughts of yoga were there. And so Prabhupada came in a very right time. And as technology has developed through the internet systems, we can see that it's very easy to spread Krishna consciousness now, much more so than what it has been previously. So modern technology and modern thinking that we are this body and we have one life, and then after that life it's all finished. Well, that's okay, but intelligent men, naturally, man is a rational animal, because God is very rational. He sets out plans everywhere, and therefore, because we are part of God, we are also rational, and we think in various ways. So you may find some atheistic, demoniac people trying to influence us and make us think in certain ways, but I don't think they're going to be that successful. Because it is the nature of a living being to be independent, and an independent thinker. That independence has been given by Krishna himself, who is the super soul in the heart. And he allows you complete independence. He doesn't really get in the way. He just facilitates your needs. So No demon, demons may try to brainwash you, but ultimately you will not be successful, because ultimately who's the supreme intelligence in our heart? That is the Paramatma. He is giving us knowledge. He's reminding us of what we want. He's facilitating so many things. And he's, if we want to turn to him, he will tell us how to come to him as well. So the demons may have their plans for extending their great empires and influencing us, but it will not work, actually, ultimately, because they are not the supreme consciousness, although they think they might well be, because if they believe in Darwinian philosophy, they'll think they're the top of the evolutionary tree, so like that. So do the trees not? I'm going to go to my notes now, otherwise I get on and on. I forget what I want to say, and I think I made some nice points here, and I always forget to go on to them because I go on about other things. So let me continue on with this. So the materialistic man of the modern age will argue that life or part of it is never meant for discussion on theosophical or theological topics, Prabhupada says. So the purpose of this verse really is to show us the value of human life, which is to cultivate spiritual consciousness and to solve the real problems of life. This is the real purpose and the real drive of this purport. Now, Adi David. Miseries of the mind, misery of living entities inflict upon us, misery to nature, these things we're all experiencing, birth, death, old age, disease, Prabhupada says it over again in his purports. The purpose of life is not to act like polished animals. Foolishly, though, unfortunately, the consciousness is mistaken by the material body and is compelled to follow the dictates of the senses and mind, and artificial intelligence causing likes and hates, attraction and repulsion. This is clearly spoken about in the Bhagavad Gita by Krishna. Purushaha prakriti stohi bhukti prakriti jnaganam karanam guna sangaisya sat asat yoni janmushu. The living entity in material life thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus he meets with good and evil among various species. So Krishna, Bhagavad Gita is a great science. Krishna, if you look at Bhagavad Gita, it's actually full of science. It's full of Krishna conscious science, what this world is, what the body is, how it works, so on and so forth. So our bodies, if we want to become liberated, we have to become liberated from likes and dislikes, honor, dishonor, and all the dualities. When we interact, automatically these things try to act within us. We like this kind of person, we don't like that person. We like the look of that person, we don't like that. Automatically, as you know in your own life, whenever you meet someone, these things crop up, and you have to bypass that type of action of the natural way the body tries to act, and you have to go beyond it using your intelligence and see the real person within and what that real person's values are, and so on and so forth. It probably is the case that that person is also equally conditioned in many ways, but these sadhus or the Vaishnava devotees, they are not so conditioned. They live their life in a different way. So it is said, satsanga tyage Vaishnava chaya sti sangi eku asuru. You should give up association among devotees and try to associate as much as possible with advanced devotees. This can be done in a number of ways, of course. We associate with devotees through our personal association with our friends and associates. We do service together. We hear from sadhus. Fortunately, because of the internet, we have access to so many sadhus, isn't it? I mean, just go on YouTube. How many sadhus do you want to hear? You can pick your sadhu, anyone you like. It's fantastic, actually, because before that, what could we do? You have live broadcasts going on, whether you like with another, whether you, like I said before, different branches of a tree, whatever branch you like, connect to. All these different branches, they look slightly different, they might speak differently on different topics, but ultimately they're connected to the trunk of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's tree, and ultimately they are on this huge branch connected to Prabhupada. Well, they might also be connected to some of Prabhupada's godbrothers. Well, you know, it's your choice. You can choose who you want to follow, because after all, this is a very broad church, not only in Vedic culture, but also Christianity and Muslim thinkers, and so on and so forth. So yeah, you can connect to any of these people you can hear. Now, as we, by hearing from them, by practicing and by associating with these, and by hearing from your spiritual master, who is your Diksha Guru, Diksha, Shiksha, no difference. There's the same message being taught. So you can have one Diksha Guru, and that Diksha Guru may be your predominant Shiksha Guru, or he may not be so predominant, he may or may not be. Generally it is the case that they are, but it may not be the case, because there are many cases where a Diksha Guru, for some reason or another, he cannot guide the disciple further, or so on and so forth. So great facility is given. Knowledge is coming about in so many different ways. And interestingly enough, actually, Sridhar Swami, one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, gave an analogy once that there was one author. He was a very famous journalist, but for some reason there was some political difficulty, and he wrote something which disturbed some of the authorities, so he had to disappear underground. But he kept writing in different journals, and people were looking for this person, and they recognized, I can see that this person who's written this article is that person, because everyone has a particular style. So you can detect someone by their writing and so forth. So, and he gave the example of that in conjunction with Satguru, pure devotee. He comes in many different forms. And sometimes Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur or Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, he'd be speaking to someone, and then afterwards he would say, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he just came, but I didn't realize it at the time. So, Om Tad Vishnu Padam Sitar Prasanti Sitsuya Divya Chakshu. You have to be open to divinity. Divinity is descending in many different ways, so we have to be open to Him. So the whole idea of chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, is to call on the Lord to descend upon us and to enlighten us. And in fact, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Maharaj says in his 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita that three verses are particularly the essence of the whole Bhagavad Gita. One is the verse when he mentions that the devotees like to speak about Sisi Radha Gokunanda, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman, Sisi Gorni Thai Ki Devi. One aspect of these three verses is when devotees get together, they want to discuss and talk about Krishna together. That's one aspect, and that's the first one of the verses. The other verse is that Krishna within the heart, he in tesam sutam yatanam bhajitam pradi. I will give you the intelligence by which you can come to me, he says. So, hearing and chanting, Srimvatam Swakata Krishna, Punya Savan Kitana, Hidyan Torsu Bharani, I will give you the intelligence. If I am there in these verses, if they're properly heard and chanted, then you will get to understand them in the association. And the third part of the verse, the other verse is that I will destroy the ignorance in your heart. So these three things, hearing and chanting together about Krishna, then Krishna will enlighten us within, and then he will destroy these anathas, anatta navritti. First of all, was it bhajan? You get faith, then you associate with devotees, then you do bhajan, and then anatta navritti. All these scientific processes take place, and this is actually working. if you do that nicely. So these three, this is the essence of devotional life, because divinity descends into one. And it is not an intellectual process, it's one of devotion. Is one of realizing. You cannot intellectualize your way out of not being influenced by the modes of nature. You have to just be free from it, and Krishna will free us from that. So it's very much a question, actually, of although we make endeavors to come to sattvic mode and do all our bhakti, Srila Gaugamanda Swami used to say, what bhajan can you do? What sadhana can you do? What austerity can you do? It is all due to mercy. And this is actually there in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's songs, Narottam Das Thakur's songs. You will constantly see, if you study their songs, it is all based on mercy. But we have to make endeavors. I mean, you can see our acharyas, they're very regulated. Prabhupada was very regulated in his life. And like, your Shivansong, we know Shivansong because he is part of this yatra and my daughter's initiative, and my friends here. He very regulated in their life, and we don't know much. They're very regulated, very committed, and they stay in certain patterns. And so that's what we have to do. If you're not that way inclined, but not just by that, but also that will not get you to the spiritual world. And this Srila Vishnu Chakravartamara says in his comments in Bhagavad Gita that devotional life is not just a matter of sattva, it is beyond sattva, it is mercy. So, this is a fact. Actually, it is thought that by those who follow Hindu Dharma or Vaishnava Dharma, that the very good argument, regarding this human form of life, I'm going to go on to that. It's a very interesting point here, because we have this problem. We've got this material body, right? Isn't it? Is there a problem for you, or is it not so much a problem? Maybe you don't think it's a problem. I don't know. It's a big problem, but in that sense, it's a blessing, because it's a big problem, but it's a gift. So, what to do with this gift? Now, people give the argument, someone might give the argument that, why are you renouncing so quickly? It'll come in time, isn't it? People give that. And this, I was reading recently, the story of Prajapati Daksha, because Narad Muni was heavily chastised by Prajapati Daksha because he sent his sons. Because his sons had to progenate the whole universe. Now, before they had to do that sacrifice, he wanted his sons to be trained up by sadhus. Because this is Balashram. Before you get married, you have to become brahmachari. You at least spend some time in the ashram. Then you can properly have your mind fixed up. Otherwise, you might get waylaid. So, this idea of you get some training done first. So, Prajapati Daksha sent his sons, who he wanted to progenate the whole universe. And Narad Muni came along and said, what are you guys doing? No, you should just renounce. So he did, this happened, and he trained the sons. He was speaking to them about devotional life and Krishna consciousness, and ultimately how one should, don't bother about trying to adjust to this life, just renounce it. So anyway, because of the association of Narad Muni, these sons actually followed him. So therefore, Prajapati Daksha had more sons. He was a little agitated, but he tolerated and had more sons. And he sent his sons, and Prabhupada makes a point in purple. It's not that he didn't send his sons back to the ashram again. He did, because he knew the importance of this training. You'd think he'd say, oh, well, that's happened once, I won't send them there again. But no, he sent them back into the ashram, and Narad Muni again came on, and he again preached to these sons to, I'm going to tell you what Prajapati to renounce life. And of course, by the association of such a sadhu as Narad Muni, they became influenced, and they again, and Prajapati Daksha at this time became rather frustrated with Narad Muni. The pastime he has confessed him that he would not be able to stay in one place, and Radhamuni took that curse as a great blessing because he didn't want to be hanging around in one place too long. And for instance, I've been in my house. When I was a child, we were always moving. My father was always buying and selling houses. We never stayed in one house very long, which is quite nice. But now I've been in this house for 22 years. And God, you know, I said to my wife the other day, you know, I was thinking of being here about 10 years. She said, no, you've been here for 22 years. It's terrible, isn't it, really? I mean, compared to Radhamuni. But anyway, such is life. We did some Krishna conscious stuff in the house anyway, so it's okay. But anyway, the point is, which I'm going to bring up here, you would listen to this argument that Prajapati Daksha gives, and I think you will sympathize with his argument. This is the argument he gives to Radhamuni. This is in connection with this verse, which says human form of life is meant for cultivation of knowledge and so on and so forth, as we read here. Anyway, he says, material enjoyment is indeed the cause of all unhappiness, but, Prajapati Daksha says, one cannot give it up unless one has personally experienced how much suffering it is. Therefore, one should be allowed to remain in so-called material enjoyment where simultaneously advancing in knowledge to experience the misery of this forced material happiness. Then, without help from others, one will find material enjoyment distasteful. Those whose minds are changed by others do not become as renounced as those who have personal experience. I mean, that's a pretty good argument, don't you think? Would you not agree with Prajapati Daksha here? So, whose side are you on, Radhamuni or Prajapati Daksha? But Narad is very humble. He didn't even give much. He just accepted the curse. But here's the essence. Prabhupada gives the answer in his purport. It's very interesting. He gives the answer to this. And actually, when you, because you, what, anyone like to say what's wrong with this argument? Radha Sangha Prabhu. Yeah. Yeah, that's a very good point. Radha Sangha says the first class person here, he learns by hearing, second class person by experience, and the third class person. So what, so basically in this point, what Prajapati Daksha is saying, indicating here is that the second class person, as you just said, will learn. But I think what you're indicating here is not necessarily that everyone is a second class person. In fact, in material world, in this Western world life, Prabhupada says people are fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth class men. So they'll never learn. And that's what Prabhupada says in the purport, actually. He says, in answer to this, he defeats this argument by saying, and if you analyze it, it's true, that can you see all the people giving up material life? Okay. Which ones do you see who are not connected to Vedic culture in serious ways giving up? They don't give up material life. In fact, they become more and more and more entangled in material life. So even if you're old like me, you still, you've got your children, and you've got your grandchildren, and you've got the great country, you still got your empire going, you still got your whole... You're so implicated, and also you may well think, oh, I'm so old now, I wish I was young again. Look at these young people enjoying so wonderfully. So these subtle things are implicating you further and further and further. And in your next life, automatically, because you're thinking that way, Krishna has to facilitate you. You want that? Okay, here you go again. So Prabhupada says in the purport, and this is the key thing, he says, what did he say? This is what he says. The young boys and girls of the Krishna consciousness movement have given up the spirit of material enjoyment, not because of practice, but by the mercy of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his servants. That is how you give up. By the association of a sadhu who can teach us these things and give us a higher taste. That's why, therefore, that verse is there, Vishaya Vinivatane, Niharashadehina, Rasavajam, Rasapiya, Shayunavan. Param Drishpanavatate. By experience of higher taste, you can give up lower taste. So this is the point here. So this business of trying to exist in this material world, looking for enjoyment, it will not be given up unless you can associate with the sadhus. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his song, Jai Gaura Mudha Swade, he says, you are bound up in a network of Maya. Bound up. You're forced to act in this way by the modes of nature. But now you have attained full consciousness in the human form of life. Simply chant the names Radha Madhava. And in his Gopinath song, he also says, O my Lord the Gopis, please hear my request. I'm a wicked materialist, always addicted to worldly desires. No good qualities do I. So this idea of descent is required. So we are fortunate to have Krishna in our hearts. He is the one who is ultimately assisting us, giving us this type of intelligence. But we need to be very good yogis. Yoga. Yoginam apisavasham makatina manaha shvadavan, isn't it? Bhajate, yeah. Do my bhajan. Those who do my bhajan think of me. They are the greatest yogis. So, yoginam apisavaram bhajatam vibhavi. So those, now, this is the thing, and if you look at the example of Arjuna, when he wanted Draupadi as his wife, he had to undergo the austerity, and then he had to put an arrow in the eye of a fish. So it probably gives the analogy in that story how his mind was totally fixed and only fixed on the eye. So in our life, we have to try to cultivate this type of inner consciousness. But we are being misled. We are being misled by so many demons. And we have to be very careful that we practice yoga properly. And Patanjali describes yoga. I've made some notes here. Nimrodha means to annihilate unwanted things. Vritti, through ways of mental modification, accepting and rejection. You have to understand how your mind is accepting and rejecting. You have to annihilate unwanted things. And you have to fix your mind. It's called ekraha, to fix the mind in one point. For us, that means Krishna Leela. So we should not waste time finding fault with this, that, and the other, and being influenced by the modes of nature. But we should be seriously practicing yoga by chanting Hare Krishna and by engaging in services in two ways, ultimately to link ourselves with the mission of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and to hear and chant about Krishna Leela. Without hearing and chanting about Krishna's Leela, we will not be able to gain the higher taste. Because it's not easy to understand Krishna, isn't it? Avajanti mammutam, I'm not available. Avyaktivati murtina, I have come, but those who some thinkers think that I am impersonal, that I have become this form. So Avijanti Mamudha, I am not manifest as such forms. So it's not so easy to understand Krishna in his two-handed form when he descends in his human form. Sometimes it is given in the Vedas, isn't it? Krishna, human form. Why did they say human form, human-like form? Because sometimes it's said quite often in the scripture, Krishna is human-like form. What do you think, Srinivas? Why human? Like, why does they give this comparison? Yeah, it is, but it's like a human type form. He has two arms. He has beautiful face, his beautiful hair. He wears a Vajanta garland. He was yellow. Yeah. But why not in a forearm form or some kind of, I don't know, why human like form? This is another point that is the universal form. So what I'm saying is that it is still difficult for us to comprehend Krishna in his two-armed form, and in the sense that he's relating. He appears to be doing very similar things that we're doing in this life, isn't it? Do you think so? He appears to be doing the same thing. He's got his friends. He has his lovers. He has his mother. So why? What is the... Couldn't he just be... I think on the Vaikuntha planets, there's not so much intimate relationships going on. But there's this sense of great warm reverence to divinity, and there's a certain rasa in that. So why should we be necessarily attracted to this form of Krishna who comes before us? For instance, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he's the great philosopher. In the Mahabharata, he leaves that Vrindavan. He goes off and does these wonderful activities. So this is the Ashiyaracharyas analyze all these things, the activities of Krishna in the Mahabharata, in Dwarka and in Mathura, as opposed to him in Vrindavan. These different aspects of Krishna's personality are analyzed very deeply, and the Acharyas, Vishwanath Chakravartin, Gautama Thakur, and Rupa Goswami, particularly in the Goswamis, analyze all these things as to why we should be so attracted to such a form. And ultimately, yes, Prabhu. I can say ultimately it's due to sweetness. It is madhurya, the sweetness of the form. But if you haven't got, if you don't like sweetness, if you like something more or reverential, or you, that's okay. It's that's what you want, isn't it? So this two-handed form of Krishna who comes before us in Vrindavan is exhibiting these greatest sweetness of personality. But these things are a little difficult, for therefore Krishna says, I am not, it's not so easy to enter into that sweetness. And it's not so easy to understand. But on the other hand, analyzing psychology and analyzing relationships in this world, we can compare. And therefore, this is said to be a reflection of the spiritual world in so many different ways, this particular life we lead. Anyways, getting on now, I just want to finish off by saying that in regards to these verses, how we are influenced by so many people, we have to be very careful, because we ourselves are being influenced in so many different ways through modern societies, through modern technologies, and the demons are working in incredibly intelligent ways. And recently there was one Indian professor who gave a talk on artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence machines are operating everywhere, deeply within every single system of the world, and they're influencing people's minds in some of the ways to make certain choices. They collect data, and they analyze that data, stick it into their machines, and it appears, at least, that intelligent design, intelligent artificial intelligence is a combination of lots of demons' intelligence. They run it into computers, but then the computers themselves begin to become almost independent of them, and they're the ones that are making the choices. So this gentleman was saying that in India and in Vedic culture, really what we need to do is to have Brahmins who are setting such artificial intelligence. They're the ones that should be operating this type of machine to prompt people to act in a proper way. But the demons prompt people to act in these ways that make people enjoy their mind and senses more and more and more and more and more. So the artificial intelligence of the Vedic Brahmins would be, they wouldn't influence people that way. Well, they'd have perhaps influence in other ways. So it's quite interesting how this goes down to the administration of society, how it's being carried out by demons in so many different levels, and how we need to analyze what their levels are, how they're working, how they're influencing, and how we need to stop their influence. So so-called free market economies, so-called freedom of democracy. No, there's no freedom. We are being forced to act in certain ways. We are being manipulated politically, economically. And Prabhupada says all this in his purport, how this modern life is supposed to be increasing the qualities of life, but actually it's decreasing qualities of life, causing more and more anxiety, more and more pain. Look at the state of the world. There's wars everywhere. The environment is collapsing and so on and so forth. Therefore, we really desperately need Brahminical men to not just to chant Hare Krishna in temples, okay, but we need to influence society worldwide. Okay, thank you very much for hearing me out today. Thank you for your association. And any comments or questions on this discussion at this point?
Babu, you said early in the class that we will constantly, when we meet people, we have a like and dislike, and we have to bypass that. Is that in, did you mean in preaching or in a devotee association?
I think it's everything, because in preaching as well, and but generally in everything we meet, because in Brahman, conscious Brahman, Buddha, Pasanatma, we're supposed to be equal-minded. We have to see people equally, that they are in knowledge, that this person is acting and thinking in this way, but actually he's conditioned. But we should have sympathy and compassion for them and not place them in boxes necessarily. But even among ourselves as well, because everyone's devotees are at different levels of their development. And we're going up and down. Sometimes we're influenced by this, sometimes we're influenced by that, and so on and so forth. So we have to be compassionate amongst ourselves, not judgmental among ourselves like that. And in that way, we will remain peaceful and not affected. Otherwise, we can get into so many issues and so on and so forth, you know, and it can disturb our consciousness. So, yeah, in preaching, in every way, we should remain cool, calm, and collected if we can. But it's not an easy thing to do because we are influenced by our passions. But at the same time, passions are good, aren't they? If you don't have passions, then nothing gets done. And Prabhupada was very passionate about spreading Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta said, those who have life, they can preach. So even in our attempts, in our enthusiasm, we might make mistakes or become overly influenced by certain moods and so on and so forth. That doesn't matter. We should tolerate each other, basically. Yes, the platform of Brahma Bhutta Pasanatma Sutra Tina. Someone who was very cold, calm, not really affected, you know, by things, you know, Prabhupada was like that. But sometimes he was very angry, of course, but in connection with services like that. Any other points?
On that last point about the manipulation of society and all that,
yeah.
I saw some things that they're trying to use computers and artificial intelligence to predict people's behavior.
Yes.
Or they're trying to predict the weather. And they got right into certain things and they got it completely wrong.
Well, this is
the people reacted completely differently to how they, expected.
That's a very good point. Yes, and the fact is they can, like I was trying to say earlier, they can try to control and predict us, but we've got our own individuality. It's like free will. You know, we have free will. They think they know how, but they don't realize how we are changing in our psyche. Depends on our spiritual searches, depends on our mode of nature. They're hoping everyone stays in ignorance and passion because that's a good mode. But like you just rightly pointed out, people are changing, like veganism. In fact, there was one lady who's just started a brewery of all things called Nirvana Brewery. I thought, wow, that's amazing. Nirvana Brewery. It's a brewery made of non-alcoholic drinks. You know, that's pretty amazing. This is the time. And vegan, like, I shouldn't say the word, mac, whatever you call them, but they're even there producing vegetarian alternatives to what they sell. I mean, you know. So, yes, they try to influence because they keep pushing their messages and they collect data for that. Yeah, that should work, this should work. Same on the stock markets. Well, they think, that this stock should do well because of this trend, that trend. But the thing is, the guys in charge, they're the ones that are setting the trends. Therefore, they manipulate society. They've got millions of pounds to invest, and they'll manipulate through the dark web and through communications that this stock will rise next week because we'll say this, give this message and that message to the right people. And therefore, these people will buy these stocks. And when these people buy these stocks, the stock market will rise. So let's invest here. So this is going on. And millions of pounds are being made just at a stroke of pushing a button. And it's all corrupt because it's basically based on someone losing money. And anyone who's acting in these ways will ultimately pay for it in the long run because... In Manu's law, we were discussing before, Manu's law is already set. The laws of nature are set in certain ways. You cannot exploit anyone. You take any energy from anyone or anything that you shouldn't really be taking with someone, you have to pay for that. That's the way Krishna's got it set up. So, yes.
So, just last point, change it, well, from me anyway, last point, change the subject. You're talking about Krishna. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says that Lord Narayan is complete, Bhokadish Krishna is more complete, and Krishna Vrindavan is most complete.
Yes, that's a nice point to finish up on. This is why we want to. He's most complete because he is full of rasa, isn't he? Full of sweetness, full of beauty, full of artistry, 64 excellences of Krishna. This is the thing, you can be in Dwarka, it's very nice, you know, Krishna's acting nice with his family and so forth. He's got his huge palaces, and this is brought out when he went to Kurukshetra, right? When he went to Kurukshetra, the gopis immediately, they saw the horses and they saw the path. They thought, we want to bring you back under the, was it Revati tree? Was it, you know, the first?
Reva wrote the sea.
Yeah, under the river. And where the sweet breezes of the Jamuna are blowing with the lotus smelling of all these things. You want this perfect playground of love, perfect playground for beauty and sweetness. These are all, this is good. The most complete, yes. Jaya Shri Prabhupada, let the Lord sit in that world, PJ, go and look at him in the PJ, Hare Krishna.